Hello, everybody. Hi. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I realize that some of you may have accidentally taken a wrong turn on your way to Butte, but it is your win today because this is going to be way more fun than all those car bombs you were going to do, or that you can do after when the senator decides to drive the shuttle and be your designated driver on this fun trip to Butte after, right? That's what's happening.
Perfect.
I think it was a campaign promise, actually. And I did hear, and you guys can tell me if this is right or wrong, but I heard just today that Helena is the only capital within the actual country that flies the Irish flag out in front. Is that true or false?
If it isn't, they should start.
Well, it is flying, but I heard it was the only one in the whole country.
That's good.
For a state capital. So very cool.
Yeah. Thank you, Thomas Maher, huh?
And it's so cool to see all of you people here today because there are so many things that you're all juggling. I know family and kids and work and getting out of work early and having so many responsibilities, but you know that your responsibility as a resident or citizen or visitor, anybody who is here today to hear from the senator and to speak with the senator, your responsibility is to be part of this community and part of this group of people working together in the best of times and worst of times, right? So thank you all for coming. My name is Hillary Hutchison, and I'm your moderator today. I think that the senator's staffers got a little bit confused. They were looking for a moderately competent speaker, but this is what you get. So thanks for having me. I'm a small business owner in Northwest Montana. I own a fly shop in Columbia Falls, and I'm a fishing guide on the Middle Fork and the North Fork of the Flathead River. I've been there working for a glacier. Thanks. I've been there working for Glacier Anglers since I was a teenager, and so for my career as a fishing guide since I was a kid has been on public lands. And so now, as a parent and as a friend to you all and a neighbor, I think that we can all agree that whether or not you're a fishing guide or a hunting guide, or whether you're just a fisher or a hunter, or whether you're just a resident of this beautiful state, the public lands are incredibly important to us. And it's not easy. There are so many things that go into this public lands issue. And that's why we're all here today. Because if we had all the answers, and if we knew all the answers, then we wouldn't need to be talking to the experts. So thank you all for coming. And if anybody has any questions for me after, feel free and hit me up on Facebook or whatever. I don't know. But in the meantime, we're here to start to take some important questions, and we'll move it along pretty quickly. We've got a couple staffers walking around with mics. And so they will be coming up to you within the audience and hold the mic for you while you ask your question. And we'll address those and kind of try to keep it moving since there are so many of you who I know have great questions. So should we
Thanks, Hillary.
Meet this guy?
Yeah, thank you very much. First of all, I just want to start by thanking you all for coming. But before we get into the program, I want, if you can stand, please do join me in a pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, once again, thank you for being here. Thank you. Hillary will be the moderator today. As she's pointed out, we've got a couple folks with mics, so be thinking of your questions now. This is focused on public lands, but quite frankly, we can go anywhere you want to go. A couple, 10 days ago or so, a week ago, we had a town hall meeting on healthcare down in Hamilton. It ended up as a town hall meeting on a myriad of different things, but we've had meetings across this state, for the last 10 years, and public lands is becoming such an incredible important issue. It's an important issue for all of us who sit in this room because some of us have lived here our whole lives and been blessed by the public lands we've been able to go and hunt and fish and hike and bike and do all those kind of things on. For the others of you, you've moved to this state because of the public lands. And you've chose to work here because of the ability to recreate on our public lands. And it is really important to know that not everybody out there thinks that public land should remain in public hands. There are folks in Washington, D.C., and not just one or two of them, that would like to see the public lands be either turned over to the state, which would end up having them be sold, or just sell them, get rid of them. And it's a very important thing that we stay on top of. And if you just want to talk about it from an economic standpoint, public lands drive an outdoor economy that's worth $6 billion a year in Montana alone, 64,000 jobs. Many of you, Hillary being one of them, are in that employment circle. So it's really important. And one of the things that have helped drive our public lands for the last many years is the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And about 9 days ago, in fact, it was exactly 9 days ago, I dropped in a bill to permanently fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. For those of you that don't know, and I'm sure you all do, that Land and Water Conservation Fund has been one of the key tools that is used by groups around this country for habitat, for hunting, fishing, for the great outdoors, and access to those areas. So it is very, very important. Now, I will tell you, 9 days ago, it wasn't as complicated as it is today, because yesterday the president put out his budget. And that budget is going to do some things to the Land and Water Conservation Fund that I'm certainly not going to like, and I've got a notion that a number of folks in this room won't like. It will, currently it's funded at about $400 million. It would cut that in half, and it would change the Land and Water Conservation Fund as we know it. Now, that's the bad news. Here's the good news. The good news is it's the president's budget. It's not Congress's budget. And Congress gets to put their fingerprints on it, and we're going to do it. But it's very, very important that, if you would like, is to get a hold of the folks that represent you and get your neighbors in neighboring states to get a hold of the folks who represent them in Washington and tell them how important different things are in the budget to you, this one being Land and Water Conservation Fund. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Hillary, who will turn it back to the folks who have the microphones to direct them to whoever raises their hand. And here's the way it worked in Great Falls. Nobody raised their hand for about the first 30 seconds, and then once it started, we had all sorts of questions at the end we couldn't get to. And might I add this, if we don't get to you, don't feel bad. If you're shy and don't want to really stand up and grab a microphone and ask a question, you can go to tester.senate.gov, give us your questions, we'll answer them the best of our ability. So we can go that route too. So, but for right now, I'd love to have some questions.
Excellent. All right, let's open it up. Let's start super close down here. Sorry, I already did my picking.
You did it?
Yes.
Oh, I got it.
Right here up front.
That's what happens when you delegate.
Senator Tester, I want to first thank you for your unwavering support for public lands.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Now that we've seen a proposed 12% cut to the Department of Interior, supported by Secretary Zinke, what conversations are you having or will you have with the Secretary and other representatives, and what actions do you plan to take to make sure that these cuts do not negatively affect Montana's public lands?
Good question. You all heard the question, of course, because it went over the mic. I'm just going to tell you this. Congressman Zinke was confirmed a couple weeks ago, so I'm not going to put it all on him yet, okay? I'm going to assume that this conversation in the Trump administration probably started with Mick Mulvaney, a guy who is the head of the Office of Management and Budget, and didn't take into consideration, because quite frankly, when I had my conversations with Representative Zinke and then candidate for the position of Secretary of Interior, he understands how important those dollars are, whether it's for our national parks or whether it's for BLM land or whatever it might be. But your question was, what am I going to do about it? And what I'm going to do about it is I'm going to continue the conversations we've had with Secretary Zinke in the past, talk to him about, you need to fight for this position. You're a Westerner. One of the reasons I supported him is because I thought we needed a Westerner in there as Secretary of Interior. Fight. I will back you if you're willing to fight. I'm an appropriator. We'll work to get that plus back up where it needs to be. Now, keep in mind that the budget is an interesting thing because it's about priorities. It's about where you want to spend your money. And Ryan knows that. He served in the state legislature, and he has served as a congressman. He should understand, and if he doesn't, we will talk more, we'll call it briskly to him, about, not bristly, brisky, to him about how important those lands, that management is. It is really critically important. And I can't say that enough. And if he comes back with some different point of view, I will tell you that I will be very disappointed. But that doesn't mean we won't double down on making sure he knows where Montana stands.
How about any follow-up questions to the budget question? Anybody have one of those? Yep, right up here.
Thank you. John, before I do the follow-up, I wanted to give a thank you to your office because I'm from Anaconda, involved with the Anaconda Sportsman's Club and organizations. We had a long battle over there with some access to the National Forest where we ended up losing in court over the modesty thing. We worked to try to compensate for that to provide some other access that came up through the racetrack area. There was an old trail in there that was classified as motorized, but it wasn't sufficient to put four-wheelers in that on there. We worked with the Forest Service. Took us about 8 months or a year to put the project together. We had a little show me last summer. We went out and looked at the project, and everything was rolling around good until we get to the final question with the Forest Service folks, and they were really good to work with. But the last question always is, we don't know if we got the budget to do this, da-da-da-da-da. And we had Eric Nyland from your office there, and what was great was that was the final hurdle we had, and Eric answered all the questions, made things happen. And when we thought that this was in May, we thought that maybe by July or August we might have some shovels on the ground. 2 weeks later, they were out there dynamiting that trail, and they're still working on it. But it was kind of nice to be able to have somebody from your office there. And so thank you very much for Eric and that.
You bet.
My question is, and it's very much along the question you were just asked, and that is, and I'm really familiar with the Forest Service budget. If you go back to the Bush years, I don't know if people remember this, but Bush reduced the Forest Service budget permanently by 40%. So for the last 13 years or so, we've been working with the Forest Service on a budget that's 60% of what it used to be, which means there's a lot less trail maintenance, there's a lot less timber sales, everything's affected across the board. So when you look at the cuts that we now face today, I'm not sure what percentage of that is from the original budget, but we're working at something that's substantially under half of what it, and there's no way that we can maintain these lands. And I'm not sure exactly how we respond to this, but this is a desperate thing. And what ends up happening out of this is they make the Forest Service so dysfunctional that then they go, well, we can't afford these lands, we got to sell them.
No, you're exactly right. Now here's the deal. In the Forest Service case, which also adds on to what you said, a 40% cut plus a 12% cut. And if you take a look at what's happened over the last 30 years, their firefighting costs eat up about 52% of their budget. So if you're a math teacher, since we're in a middle school, if you add 40 plus 12 plus 52, we're working on negative numbers here. The truth is that there is a proposal to treat fire like it's a natural disaster, which is what it is, which would free up dollars for the Forest Service to do the management on those trails, to do the management in the woods that needs to be done, to be able to keep these forests healthy. And it's a bill that's out there that we have not been able to get enough folks to vote for. It is bipartisan in nature, but we haven't been able to get enough folks to vote for it to get it through the process. But that, I believe, when it comes to the Forest Service, now it doesn't help BLM, but when it comes to the Forest Service, but we can start with the Forest Service and move it to the BLM later, that's going to be a critically important component, because you are exactly right. If you deplete these agencies enough, if you remove payment in lieu of taxes funding, which we get for federal lands, which I understand the budget also pretty good dent into, in fact may have eliminated it, then pretty soon folks are saying, well, gosh, the federal government can't do it, so let's just get rid of them. We can't let that happen. So that bill on forest firefighting is really critically important.
All right, I think we'll probably be bouncing around for budget questions, but we can open it up all over. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Tester, thank you, first of all, for having a real town hall meeting and not a phone call.
Okay.
So You know, I tried the phone town hall situation, and you know, people get put on mute. You know, they get to answer their question, and then they're put on mute, so yeah. So there can't really be a conversation. But thank you. We really appreciate you're taking democracy seriously here.
Thanks.
I also want to thank you for when you were on the Senate floor speaking out against Scott Pruitt for EPA Administrator. Yeah. I know that took a lot of courage. You know, that took a lot of courage, but this is a guy who doesn't even accept the science on climate change. I saw him on the news the other day saying he didn't think CO2 had a role in global warming.
Yeah.
So, and this guy's leading the EPA now.
Yeah, I know.
So thank you for your courageous stand on that.
Yep.
When I think about public lands, my main concern is with the wildlife. You know, the wildlife, I think, is what makes Montana the last best place. You know, we have almost all the original carnivores that we had on this land, and there's almost nowhere else in the world like that. So I want, basically, I know that there's a, with this new administration, there's a move like by, let's see, who's that horrible guy? Representative Rob Bishop of Utah. Yeah. So this guy is behind the effort to sell our public lands, yeah. And thank you for speaking up so strongly against that. Mm-hmm. And he's also a person who's trying to kill the Endangered Species Act.
Yeah.
And you know, the Endangered Species Act has been so incredibly successful.
Yeah.
All those threatened creatures that have been saved by that. And it actually ends up protecting some of the beautiful lands that make Montana so great. Mm-hmm. So what I would like to ask you, I guess, is will you be a strong advocate for preserving the Endangered Species Act?
Yeah, well, look, I think that, yeah, I mean, we base it on science, absolutely, 100%. I mean, and I think that's what it needs to be based on. And if we're able to manage this stuff, I mean, the ESA came along because people understood in my folks' generation that if you eliminate enough animals, we're the next animal to be eliminated. And that wouldn't be good, okay? I'm not looking forward to that day at all. So I think it is critically important, and I think there have been some great advances for different species moving forward. And it has really put some pressure, by the way, on local and private governments, private entities and local governments to really help step up the plate and find a solution. So it's been good. So yeah, in Pruitt wasn't that tough.
All right, next question, right up here.
I'm terribly concerned about the safety of our federal employees after the occupation of the refuge.
Yeah.
Was it last year or 2 years ago in Oregon? And with the shenanigans that go on in Nevada, and I don't know if you have any thoughts about how that might be handled in the future, but I'm terribly concerned, and I'm terribly concerned that the laws are not being followed. If a rancher in Nevada can graze his cattle for free for years, there's something really wrong with the system.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is that those lands need to have a fair rate of return, just like you would if I was leasing them out, okay? So that really needs to happen. It's interesting you bring up the point about the safety of our federal employees, whether BLM or Forest Service or whoever they may be that are out managing these lands. It's not an issue that's talked about much in Washington, D.C., but it's an issue that is really, really, really important. And I think that part of the solution, by the way, is enforcing the laws. And I have some of the same frustrations you had with what went on at the reserve in Oregon and what has transpired in Nevada. And I can just tell you that if I don't pay the lease on the land I rent, I don't rent it very long. My neighbor's renting it. And that's the same thing. I mean, if these guys don't want to pay their bills, then they're not living up there into the agreement. And it's as simple as that. And they don't own that land. We do. And it's really important. Let me tell you a funny little story. In 1998, when I was running for the state legislature in my district, the Missouri River was a pretty hot topic. And my neighbor, who was in the state legislature, was kind of a slow-talking guy. And they were having a public meeting in Fort Benton. And he got up and he said, you know, you guys, this is after a long discussion. He said, you know, I'm sure glad I don't own any BLM land. Now, it was a Freudian slip, okay? But the truth is that is how some people look at it, and it's not. It's important that we get we get a return on this land that we deserve. And then we can take that money and turn it around and make for better habitat and take care of some of the problems you were talking about.
All right, how about right here up front?
I'm glad to see you survived Hamilton. Just before I came here, I read on a fake news site, MSNBC, that Preet Bharara was investigating Secretary Price for insider trading. What can we do to make sure that that isn't dropped? And secondly, what happens to him if he is convicted of insider trading?
Well, what should happen if you're convicted of insider trading is what happens to anybody if they're convicted of insider trading, and that is stiff fines and maybe worse for them. If in fact that is the case, we will do some work on that. There's a lot of investigations going on right now within the government, and so we need to figure it out. I had not heard the one with Price. I had heard that brought up during his confirmation that he had done some insider trading on prescription drugs, but that kind of stuff needs to be enforced to the full extent of the law. If you or I did it, it would be. I guarantee it.
All right, question in the back. Here, right back here with your hand. Yep.
Oh.
yeah, you.
Hi. I'm so glad to meet you. I'm probably the crazy lady from Clancy. I've written your office several times.
And did I'm we really respond?
Yes.
Good.
And I'm very anxious, but I'm so concerned. I don't know if I'm going to make it through these 4 years. Sometimes I just have to block myself out from the real news or the fake news. Who knows, right? But when you, as a senator, look at the budget, I guess my concern is why such a huge increase in the military, and where will that money go? Sometimes I feel like the president is doing that to protect himself and his investments and his rich friends' investments. And secondly, why I am morally against building a wall between us and Mexico. And why do I have to? I would rather have my tax dollars go to protecting our lands than to build a wall.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, thank you for the questions. And Hillary, you'll have to remind me if I miss one of them, okay? The first thing is
we love crazy yeah. ladies writing to the office. So everybody do it all
Thanks,
the time.
Hillary. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. The first thing I would say is that the democracy gets tested on occasion. And the country's been around a while. And I'm going to tell you, it's being tested right now. The checks and balances are being tested. The budgetary process is being tested. The amount of money that flows into campaigns around this country is, people are starting to get an awareness of what the hell that really means. And I will tell you that there are many nights when I go to bed that I don't sleep too well. But one thing that does give me some sort of puts me at ease a little bit is the issues that have come up over the last month, 2 months, actually 6 months, haven't gone away. They continue to be there, and people continue to be outspoken, and people continue to be contacting my office, and I'm sure other offices, about what they feel is important. And I think that is the key to how a democracy needs to work. People need to be involved, and that's what gives me hope. Now, as far as the budget and as far as the wall and as far as all that goes, I can tell you that there are plenty of reasons, and this is a fact, there are plenty of reasons why you would put $54 billion into our military. We've been at war for 15 years, and there's plenty of places you can put that money. Here's where I have the problem. When we first went into Iraq, that war was put on the credit card. And you don't put wars on a credit card. You pay for them. And if we paid for wars, it would make us think twice before we went into them, quite frankly. So that's the first thing. So the second thing is, and I say this as ranking member on the veterans, and I think that we've kind of got our point across to the administration, is that we send our young men and women off to war, And when they come back, there wasn't a, well, we might cover you, or you might get that benefit. You're going to get it. And it doesn't matter if you're in the active military or if you're in the Guard or Reserve, if you went off and did your time, and you were in a war zone and you were in theater for sure, you get those benefits. And I think we've gotten that through. As far as the wall goes, one of the things that I have said on the wall from the get-go is that there's nobody in this room that won't say that the security of this country is very, very important. It absolutely is. You guys know that. There's all sorts of people out there that want to do us harm. But what's the best way to handle the problem? Is the best way with a wall that is, Governor Schweitzer said a few years ago, you build a 10-foot wall, they'll buy a 12-foot ladder. You know, or is it investing in technology that may cost far less than a wall and be far more effective on determining what's going on our borders? And so I happen to also be ranking member on the Homeland Security Subcommittee on Appropriations, and now we're in the weeds a long ways here, folks. But there's about $20 million they want us to reprogram within the Department of Homeland Security to do a test wall. I'm working with John Bozeman, who's a Republican out of Arkansas and a hell of a good guy. And I've talked to him, and so far I think if we keep talking on these lines, we might be able to get this done, that it shouldn't be about building a prototype wall. It should be about an all-of-the-above strategy about how we make this country's borders as secure as they possibly can. It might be a wall, it might be technology, it might be manpower, it might be drones, it might be radar. There's all sorts of things out there. So hopefully in this country where we don't have tons of money laying around, we'll be smart when we do this. The last thing I'll say is this, and I probably should have led with this. If you're taken out of domestic programs to pay for military programs, you're pitting two constituencies against one another, and that is never good. That's just never good. You're taking Meals on Wheels away from people to pay for military, that's a problem. That's a problem.
All right, let's go right into the middle here. Yep, right
there. Uh-oh.
Or not.
No, it's great.
Okay. You're right. I'm here to tell you, you talk about being ranking member of these committees and that.
Yeah, I want to be chairman.
Never forget, you are the number one ranking member for this group here,
oh,
Public Lands,
you.
And it always, we thank can you. Trust you.
Thank you very much.
The reason I came from Sealy Lake this morning,
yes,
is because I would like to make a few comments about your Blackfoot Clearwater Stewardship Act. And we are immensely grateful. We believe it is a model for the country, this collaborative, and you've been unending in your support. We always talk about all the different components, all the interests. We talk about timber. We talk about mountain bikers. We talk about snowmobilers, hikers. We talk about wilderness. We talk about harvest. We talk across the board. But one thing we do not talk about, and I'm here as a 35-year businesswoman in that area, we do not talk about the economic impact of making all those components survive. As a businesswoman, I needed the logging trucks. I needed the Volkswagen buses that came in. They open their doors and they spill out and they come to the ice cream. I need the students in our local schools that come over and go for tours, and their families come in to buy their electrical goods. It's across the board. And the Blackfoot Clearwater Stewardship Act reflects what businesses, not only in that boundary itself, but what businesses need in this state. And that's the diversity, that's collaborative level of people that are in the weeds. And we need a senator like you to take that kind of act forward so the rest of the world can see this is where the solutions are and you provide it. So thank you.
No, thank you. Just really quick, and you've said it all, but the folks around Sealy and the Blackfoot Clearwater Partnership folks have worked in a collaborative way for over 10 years. You probably know exactly how many years it's been, but I know it's been over 10 years because it was going on before I got in the U.S. Senate. And I can tell you that it is that model that we need to use throughout this country, where folks on the ground get together and they used to fight like hell. In your particular case, you got to the same table and everybody gave a little bit and everybody got a lot. And hopefully we can get the entire delegation on board with that bill and get it passed, because I do think economically it can be powerful for that region. And quite frankly, even bigger than just the Sealy area as far as economic opportunity. Where are we at now?
Excellent. We're just going to run down to the front row super quick. You have a question, sweetheart?
This is, by the way.
I live in Livingston, and my name is Clara. And there's two mines in Paradise Valley. And, who wants a mine in Paradise Valley? Because it's really pretty there. And I think it's really important that we could keep a mine out of Paradise Valley, because that's public land. And I think it's really important to keep it away from a mine.
Hey, Senator, thank you.
I was going to start this conversation out by asking you to raise your hand if you use public lands. Raise your hand if you use public lands. Raise your hand if your parents use public lands. Raise your hand if you want your kids to use public lands. That's why we do what we do right there, okay? As far as that mine goes, first of all, we talked about collaboration up in Sealy. We say the same thing with the community of Livingston on this mine. It is at the doorstep of Yellowstone National Park. It is one of the most beautiful places in the world, and that's not brag, that's fact. And there are some places where mining is entirely appropriate. This is not one of those places. And so one of the things we did when we had a rally there about 4 or 5 months ago now, and we talked about putting a moratorium on that mine on a temporary basis, I had said I'm going to do it permanently, and which is the right thing to do. I shortly got a phone call from then Congressman Zinke and said, can I be on that bill too? Which I said, you betcha. Now he's Secretary of Interior, and we're going to hold him to that same commitment.
Thank you. All right. Let's see. What do you think, Jesse? Can you get back here in the back?
I think so. Me. Okay. Senator, I have a question. Have you made a determination about the Supreme Court justice? I'm real concerned about turning more control over to the agencies that are now being headed up by people with a lot of private interest.
Mm-hmm. Great question. And this is the big issue that's going to be coming up starting next week with the hearings on Gorsuch. I have not made up my opinion yet. I'm going to wait till after the hearings are over with, which will probably take the best part of next week. And then I've got to read some of his opinions. I've read the Hobby Lobby opinion. There's a trucking opinion I've got to read. There's some other ones I've got to read. Nonetheless, I'm going to try to read as many as I can. I've told folks from the beginning I'm not going to treat him like they did the previous appointee. I was going to give him a fair shake, and I will continue to do that. And my guess is very, very soon, like I said, I got to do a little more reading. I want to see how he goes through the hearing process. We'll make a decision. Now, here's why the hearing process is so really very important. It's very important because they will be, I asked all the questions. He was in. I was one of the first people to meet with him. We asked him a bunch of questions, and he, to be honest with you, and it was the same thing with the appointee before. I don't know, it's good, sorry for all the attorneys in here, but I don't know if they're good attorneys or what, but they don't answer questions, okay? So I'm hoping that the committee gets some more answers better than I did, and then we'll be paying attention to that, and then we'll make a decision. You'll be the second to know.
Okay, does anybody have a question for an attorney? Just kidding. How about right back here? Let's go back here. All right.
Hi, Senator Tester, Colleen Grass, and it's been a long time since we were cutting meat together in Big Sandy.
What's your last name?
Grass.
Oh, yes, Colleen,
yeah.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, we cut some meat.
Yeah. So I want to thank you so much for the common sense approach that you have to our Second Amendment rights here in the country. Montanans are strongly Second Amendment people. We use our guns for hunting and, you know, actually putting food on the table and things like that. And I want to thank you for also supporting background checks on them. It's very important that we keep dangerous people from having guns out in the public. And Governor Bullock just vetoed a bill that would have let people without permits carry their guns in Montana. It was a bill that was opposed by the Montana Sheriff's Association and by the Montana Chamber of Commerce. And then we had Amanda Curtis and a Republican here in the state legislature, Geraldine Custer, both make courageous statements about, you know, stopping the craziness, because there are some really stupid bills that have been coming forward. And now I'm really worried about the one in Washington that threatens to undo the safeguards that we have here in Montana. And so I'm just asking you if we could count on your support protecting us from federal laws that would undermine our state laws on who could carry a gun in public.
Great question, and great point in that we use guns to put food on the table. I'm one of the few guys that actually can say I made my living with a gun for a while because of butchering beef for 20 years. I can tell you that you're right. Montanans respect Second Amendment rights in a big, big way. I will do, here's the promise I make you. I will do whatever I can do to make sure that we do what we can do, number one, to ensure Second Amendment rights are there for law-abiding citizens, and to make sure that if you're a criminal or a terrorist or somebody who's court-adjudicated mentally ill, that you don't have that same access. And that's the best I can do for you, because, quite frankly, I'm one of those folks that got more guns than I need and fewer than I want. Just the way it is. So, thanks, Colleen.
All right, next question. Robin, who do we have back this way? Yep.
Hi, Senator.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I was walking behind you this morning in Butte, and you sure look good on a John Deere.
He did go to Butte this morning.
I did.
That's right. I forgot.
And then I also saw you in Great Falls at that town hall, and I just wanted to second that idea that you were so level and fair and grounded, and you know, it was over 60 minutes of talking to people, and I think there was only one sort of aggressively opposition moment.
That's okay.
And you were completely fair about the whole thing. And, you know, I come from a split ticket family too. And so I just wanted to say that I so appreciated that.
Thank you very much.
My question, though, is about, you know, I'm a little bit confused, and I hope you can clarify for me. The lead bullets, that bill that allowed for lead gunshot, that I think you approved. Can you talk me through that? Why that was a good decision?
On the lead bullets on public lands, or the
lead bullets, and for and it was for water, like birds and
So as with any issue, it deals with birds mainly. As with any issue, you have to you weigh the pros and the cons. I like to be able to have folks be able to go out and utilize the public lands that are there, and the private lands as far as that goes, where there's good habitat to be able to go hunting. And I just thought that the potential negative part of the lead bullets was less than the ability for people to go out and enjoy the outdoors. So that's why I did what I did.
All right, I am going to get out the big rubber band that throws the t-shirt up into the nosebleeds. So right back there, Jesse.
Oh, man.
There's no free t-shirt, by the way. I'm sorry.
I've actually never been accused of needing a microphone before, so I apologize if this is too loud. Thank you very much for coming to a town hall and hosting this. I really appreciate that. My question is kind of on what everybody is here for. Everybody has their things that they are really passionate about. What is the best way, the most effective way, to contact our legislators, to get our word out? What is it that the legislators that you are dealing with every day, what is it that they respond to? Because I think we all know where you stand on most things,
yeah.
But what about everyone else, and how do we get our point across? And when we only have three legislators in for Montana, can we, should we be talking to all of the others? How do we do it?
Well, I mean, here's I'll tell you how, I don't know how the other guys do it, but I'll tell you how I do it. If you contact my office, Montanans get first priority. We try to get back to the folks out of state if we have time to do it. Sometimes we're able to, sometimes we're not. The best way to contact my office, and I think it's true for them all, by the way, is either by emails, telephone calls, or faxes, and primarily the first two. The reason is, and I love my folks from the letter carriers, but the fact is it takes about 90 days for a letter to get to my office in Washington, D.C. If you're going to send me a letter, send it to my state office because it doesn't take as long. But emails and phone calls are the best. And I would absolutely call and email as often as you would like. As I said when we started out here, public involvement is the key to our democracy. Public education is actually the key. But after you get educated, then getting a hold of folks is really, really important. And I have heard time and time again folks say, well, it doesn't do any good to call our elected representatives. It doesn't do any good to email them. It absolutely does good. It absolutely is effective. If you want examples, I can give them to you. So when your opinion's out there and you might not think your opinion's being heard, you couldn't be more wrong. It is being heard. Even if you don't get a response, and by the way, you should always get a response from my office, because I pay people to respond to you with my words, okay? And that's a fact. So that's what I would say. Emails, phone calls, and do it. And then the other thing I would tell you is this. You all probably got relatives that live in some other state, right? Have them contact their reps. Have them contact their senators. Let them know what's going on. I just think that involvement in our democracy is really important. It's really important. And it's critical at this moment in time.
I call the senator's office a lot, and it always picks up on the third ring. And I finally said, why do you always answer on the third ring? And the staffer said, well, we don't want to answer on the first because we have to play a little hard to get. All right, let's do one more in the back, and then we'll move it back up front here in the Irish green.
Let's see, where's Jesse? Okay,
I got you.
Got to be a little quicker, farmer, I'm telling you.
Thank you. My name's Michelle Christensen. I'm the director of a TRIO talent search program for Montana Tech. And I just wanted to tell you, Senator Tester, that I had the privilege of spending my day with a senior whose father committed suicide when he was age 4, whose mother is a meth addict. And if not for programs like TRIO and the great school counselors that we have, he wouldn't know the opportunities that are out there for him. So we so appreciate your support of our programs.
Well, TRIO is a great program, I'll just tell you. TRIO does some marvelous work, I'll just tell you that. It's money well spent. It costs a few bucks, but boy, the benefits are huge on the other end.
All right, next question right up here, Robin.
Yes, my name's John Elgin Fritz, and most of my work life has been in human services, and when I hear the president talk about decimating so many of the domestic programs, and then I hear how much it costs for us taxpayers to pay for him to go Mar-a-Lago and the Trump Towers and all these things, the thing I wonder is, does the executive branch have any kind of budget they have to live within?
Yeah, it goes through Congress, yeah. It does. Congress is the one that makes the final call, and they do. And, yeah, I hear you. No, I mean, I mean, it seems as if there's a double standard, and there should be no double standards in this country. And so it's important that we protect him and his family, but I've got to tell you, I've got some heartburn with his kids running to Uruguay, and we're protecting him down there, I do. But the little boy in New York City, protect him. Make sure he's protected. That's critically important. The same thing with his wife. Yes.
Senator Tester, thank you for your service. I appreciate the advice about how to best contact your office. Mm-hmm. And we've heard that a lot, and people are taking action.
Yes.
I'll hand it right back to you.
Yeah.
The one thing that I would like a little bit of guidance on is we are getting inundated every single day with, in my opinion, bizarre and not accurate statements or budget cuts, like, you know, we're going to take all the way the funding away from all the libraries in the United States.
Yeah.
LSTA money. Part of me wants to just do this.
Yeah.
For most of the day, but I need to stay engaged. And so what I'm asking for advice about is when do I jump in? How do you sift through what is craziness?
Yeah.
And I would say part of his budget, if it never goes anywhere, we've got a lot of people screaming over something that's not going to happen, and we're going to get tired.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I'm looking for. So guidance on when do we plug in? What do we pay attention to? We know how to do it now, but what?
Well, I think it's to each of your whatever floats your boat, so to speak. If I don't think it hurts right now, if you think there's a potential of the library dollars going away, it doesn't take very long to type out a little email and rifle it off. I think it's important. I do think that the budget that the president put out, we need to pay attention to. I don't think it will be the final budget, but what will determine what that final budget looks like is folks like you sending an email saying, you know, if they cut these library funds, here's what will happen. Okay, just don't say, I don't want library funds cut by 50% or 100%. Say, if you cut them by 50%, here's who's going to lose access. Here's what's going to happen to our libraries. And that's where people start paying attention, okay? If you sell our public lands, our economy will be reduced by $6 billion. That gets people's attentions, okay? I'm telling you. So my point to you is if you see something and you don't like it, rifle it off. Send it out. Because if you don't, it does two things. Number one, it lets people know what's going on that are in elected positions. Number two, it takes away any cover. They can't say, well, geez, I didn't know about this. And number three, you got a possibility of changing the thing before it gets to a point where it becomes written in stone. Sure. That's not my job. Hillary, do you want to?
Yes, you may follow up. I need you to fill out the short questionnaire.
Okay, it'll be quick. It seems to me that one great way for us to get involved is that we are very lucky. We're very special. We get a special election on May 25th. And so this is a great time to send a message to Washington saying, the country is going the wrong way and we're terrified. So, and to do that, we need to win. We need a blue candidate to win in a red state. That's how it seems to me. I'd love to hear two things. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the candidates in that race. And I'd love to hear your suggestions on what we can do to campaign in Montana. You're a very effective campaigner in Montana.
Okay.
What should we be doing to help elect Rob Quist?
Well, I'll just tell you about my candidates in the race, and this may be just a shock to all of you, but I happen to like Rob Quist a lot, okay? I think he is somebody that is honest and straightforward and absolutely will work his tail off trying to do the right thing for the people of the state of Montana. Rob Quist is going to get outspent in this election 3-4-5, maybe 10-1, something like that. So, but money isn't going to buy this election. I'm going to tell you, it's not going to buy this election. What's going to happen, I'll tell you what's going to happen. How old are you, by the way? 36?
He's American.
You need to run for public office. Yes. I'm telling you. Exactly. So the bottom line is that if Rob Quist is your person and you want Rob Quist to win, get 10 people to go to the polls that didn't vote last time. and vote for Rupquist.
Jesse, all right, up there in the back, thanks.
My name's Penny, I came from Bozeman and I actually worked for Right Now, so I know Greg and Steve. but we were talking about the Supreme Court nominee earlier, and
yes,
there's a number of people who, you know, propose less government, less government. I don't happen to be one of them. I mean, to me, the fact that Merrick didn't get, you know, yes, a hearing and that type of thing would suggest that maybe we need more laws in that area, that when a Supreme Court nominee or a justice dies or vacates, that the president has, you know, say 90 days to nominate someone, Congress has 120 days or something like that, so that we take away this opportunity to just move along. And this, the same thing with the presidential election, is that we had one candidate who had quite a bit of information available about her, namely tax returns, emails even. The other candidate we didn't. So how are people supposed to make a fair assessment? And maybe there should be laws about what presidential candidates must release so that the public can make that assessment. Is there any movement in that direction or discussion, or
well,
what are your thoughts on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think there's a bill right now, I think Chris Murphy's got it, to require presidential candidates to release their tax forms. I think that would be a right thing to do. I will tell you that on Merrick Garland's case, I don't think the Constitution was followed, quite frankly, at all. And folks didn't pay a price for that. And I would say that, you know, we could make everything defined by days, but you got to look at the people who held the process up and hold those folks accountable. And it can be done, but it has to happen. And I will tell you that what they did to Merrick Garland is not something that I think is conforms with our Constitution, nor was I think it the right thing to do, to not even have a conversation with this guy. But I'm going to tell you what it falls back on, and this is a fact. We need campaign finance reform in this country so bad. Contrary to what you might hear, there's relationships that are built across the aisle. And Jerry probably wouldn't appreciate me saying this, but Jerry Moran is a Republican out of Kansas that I actually like, and I like him a lot. Jerry Moran was going to bring in Merrick Garland and say, I'm going to interview him. And after he announced that to the press, he was told in no uncertain terms if he did that, there would be a primary candidate run against him that would be well-funded. And Jerry said, you know what, I don't think I'm going to bring him in. This is craziness, folks. This is absolute craziness. And it pushes politics to the fringes, and it's not good for the country. And so if we were going to do one thing other than keeping our public lands in public hands, it would be to put some campaign finance reform rules in place. And I've got about four of them that could really do a lot of good work. Unfortunately, I can't get a lot of bipartisan help on a couple of them that would be really good.
We're starting to get to the point where we're running out of time. So if I could see you guys in camo, I would throw the mic to you more.
Thank you. Senator Tester, as a sportsman, I just wanted to thank you for your vote last week against using the Congressional Review Act to nix Planning 2.0, which is the BLM's new and improved planning program that was initiated last year that gave the public more involvement, offered more transparency, sped up the program. And unfortunately, both the House and the Senate thought otherwise and didn't agree with you and voted to nix that, taking us back to a planning rule from 1983 that worked for no one, that nobody enjoyed. And I would have to agree with this gentleman to my left that it almost seems like people in the legislature are trying to poorly manage our public lands almost on purpose to lend the argument that they're poorly managed and therefore we should transfer or sell them. What are we going to do to help fix this problem? Because it's going to take more than just the talks about the budget, and it sounds like the budget's moving in the wrong direction anyway. So what other ideas do you have, and what else can we do to help?
I'm going to tell you, this might be oversimplifying the situation, but it's about people. It's about people making sure their voices are heard. And I know there's a number of groups in here, and there's however many individuals in here. Make sure that those groups are out talking to folks. Make sure as an individual you're out talking to folks. Because the truth is, a lot of times the dots aren't connected. A lot of times that, you know, I'm just fiscally conservative, so I'm not going to fund that program because I just don't want to spend that money. When in fact there's another agenda behind that. And so make sure that you let folks know, myself included, if you see stuff going on that bothers you and you think that there's the dominoes are starting to fall, make sure you let us know, because I think it makes a difference. I really do. And that's the best I can do for you, other than running for office. Yeah.
Okay, right here.
Yes, Senator Tester. I'm an engineer, and I believe in science-based solutions.
Yep.
I think if we look at what China is doing on climate change,
yep.
They built a coal strip power-sized power plant every week for many, many years until they have air that they can't breathe and, totally unlivable. They have now gone to a massive program of building nuclear power plants and especially advanced nuclear power plants that they're going to market all across the world. I suggested to your office, to Senator Dane's office, and others that we consider an advanced nuclear power plant at Colstrip 1 and 2. If I send you some literature, would you promise to personally take a close look at this? Because it is not what your office told me it is.
Okay.
It does not generate waste. It actually consumes waste,
okay.
And it'd be a great solution.
You beat me to my question for you. First of all, number one, I absolutely will look at it. My only concern with nuclear power, other than keeping it under control, but should be able to do that, is the waste. And if the waste is, because, you know, you're an engineer, you know that stuff isn't particularly good for you. If the waste is handled, that puts a different light on it.
The waste that exists as spent nuclear fuel at all the power plants around the country is 500 years worth of fuel if utilized through advanced nuclear reactors,
yep.
Like GE Hitachi's PRISM reactor.
Send me the stuff. I'd be more than happy to take a look at it. I think options are critical.
All right. Question back here.
Senator, you've talked about the divisiveness that is in our country right now, and it's unfortunate. I think you've talked about working across the aisle as well. You mentioned the Land and Water Conservation Fund, and LWCF, you know, is the number one access tool here in the United States. Here in Montana, it's paid for 70% of our fishing access sites, paid for Tenderfoot Creek, a nice feeder to the Smith River. You've worked really hard to get bipartisan support in the Senate. We have a problem in the House we've already talked about. His name's Congressman Bishop. And so not only do we have bipartisan support in the Senate, we have bipartisan support in the House. How do we get around Congressman Bishop?
You got to have people that are willing to stand up to him in the House. And I think that that's what's really important. You know, I had somebody comment to me the other day that, the Senate works, the chairman tell you what to do. That isn't where it works where I come from. If the chairman tells you what to do and it isn't what you want to do, you figure out ways you can roll them. And that's what they need to do. They got to figure out a way to roll Bishop. And by the way, the Trade Association that pulled out of Utah sent him a hell of a message. I'll tell you that. That's real money that left Utah because of him. And Chaffetz. But
right.
We've got to get the people on that committee to say no to him. He is not where he needs to be on this issue.
All right, I think we only have time for a couple more questions. So we're going to go, Robin, back here to the gentleman here, and then we'll go next to the gentleman here in the blue shirt.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Rick Anderson, lifelong resident of Montana. Public lands. As you know, through the years, I've rode horseback. I've even rode a mountain bike, hike. And I'm the age now where I really like four-wheeling. And a lot of older folks, handicapped, are using ATVs and that kind of equipment. I'm a member of the CTVA, Capital Trail Vehicle Association. And we're taking a lot of hits on road closures and trail closures. Two of them adjacent to the Helena Valley and the Blackfoot Travel Plan at Lincoln. So I'm asking, are you going to give us some support when we negotiate some of these trails? We usually, there's some trade-offs, but we usually, the trade-offs are not in our, we lose more than more is closed than what's left open.
Yeah. Well,
and I get on the trail and people say, how come they're closing all these roads? How come they're closing all these trails? I say, well, you have to go to these meetings and find out why, because it's the government. So.
Well, the government's us, but let me tell you that part of the reason those trails are going to be closed because of the backlog of maintenance on those trails, and it's in the millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. I can tell you that we'll work with you any way we can to improve access and increase access. Here's the problem. And this isn't you, okay? This is problems I hear in Washington, D.C., and I heard it early with some of the bikes, with folks that are wearing helmets. They don't know who they are, and they may not be on the trails. That's where the problem has always been with the motorized. I'm just telling you from a deflect. But as far as access, as far as the folks, you're good. You stay on the trails. You do what you do. You're back there for all the right reasons. We'll help you whenever we can. Okay?
All right. Excellent. Right here.
Senator Tester, is this on?
Yeah. It is.
Healthcare is in the news again.
It is.
And there's a lot of ideas floating around being presented about how we could save money and provide health care to America. Personally, I think I don't think I've heard of any idea yet that's going to do anything more than save money. And it'll save money by hurting people.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I won't go into a big sales pitch here, but in my opinion, I think a single-payer healthcare system is the only answer. A single-payer healthcare system is something like Medicare. What do you think about Medicare for All?
I will tell you that we are so far away from Medicare for All right now that it's... let me tell you what I saw over in the House, and let me back up. Let me tell you what I see with the healthcare bill we have right now. In Montana, I see 71,000 additional working poor that are on because of Medicaid expansion. I see people with pre-existing conditions, people who keep their kids on till they're 26, people who hit lifetime caps because they might have cancer or something, being able to stay on. And by the way, pre-existing conditions doesn't necessarily mean not diabetes. It does mean diabetes. But it may be something as small as what probably most of us have in this room, high blood pressure, not be able to get on. So all that is going to go away for things like high-risk pools and block-granting Medicaid, and it's going to be pretty disastrous. Now, the real problem with the Affordable Care Act right now is there's folks who don't get subsidies that are getting hammered with insurance rates and high deductibles. We ought to fix that. Now, I'm telling you, if we could get that fixed without taking insurance away from everybody else, then we could have the debate on what you just talked about, which is Medicaid for All or single payer. But we are so far away from that debate right now that we're not even in the ballpark. And I can tell you that when I run around, and I've been around the state of Montana since the election because I knew this was going to be real after the president got elected. We've got small hospitals that if their charity care goes up, they're going to be closed. And I'm telling you, in my small town, it took 50 years from the time the homesteaders came to build that hospital, and it's been another 50 years since it was built. And if it closes, it won't reopen. And you're going to see small communities across this state move to the bigger communities because of health care. Now they do it at about 75 or 80. They'll be doing it about 50 or 55. And it's just going to be terrible. So even though I appreciate you bringing that issue up, man, we're along. I mean, if the care that Ryan has put through gets through the House and gets through the Senate without the kind of changes that need to do, and we end up throwing people off of health insurance, the impact it's going to have, I'll tell you one quick story. The impact it's going to have on our hospitals and on our economy is going to be critical. I was in Butte about 4 or 5 months ago, and trust me, I just don't go to Butte, okay? I was in Butte about 4 or 5 months ago, and it was right after the election, so it was in November, however long ago that was. And I had a guy come into one of my round tables, and we talked with doctors, and we talked with patients, and we talked with hospital administrators. And he was about 40 years old. He said, I've had diabetes my whole life, and I've never been able to get it under control. He said, I've got mental health issues. I've not been able to get that under control. And he said, I've got 2 kids, and he said, I was unemployed. And he said, along came the Affordable Care Act. And I got my diabetes under control. I went and saw a psychologist, figured out how to manage my mental health issues. And he said, now I've got a job, and I'm supporting my family. And he said, now I pick up the newspaper, and I see that you guys want to take it all away from me. And he says, it scares the hell out of me. That's where people are right now. And that's why we got to be very careful if we're moving forward on this stuff, to make sure that we don't end up doing things that really will have some real negative impacts on rural America. And I say that because the president's budget that just came out, and I don't fault him for it. He's from New York City. He shouldn't know what it's like in Helena, Montana, or Livingston, or wherever you live, Saco, or wherever. But that budget's going to kill. From what I've seen, it's just flat going to kill rural America. So we've got to figure out how to do not only health care better, we got to figure out how to make sure these programs stick around so we got an economy moving forward so folks like these kids over here can stay in this state and have the kind of life that we've enjoyed because of our parents and our grandparents did the right thing. So appreciate your question. Thank you.
All right. So here's the thing. I have good news and bad news. The good news is we're going to answer everybody's questions in here. The bad news is you have to go online. So tester.senate.gov. So please go on there and ask any question you'd like, and they will be answered, correct?
Yes, it yes. will. Absolutely. And if it's not, call me.
Right.
Okay.
And you never mentioned as one of the ways to contact you was like texting with emojis and all of the, no.
We can do that too.
Okay, yeah. Great. So you heard that. You get the number, then just text all the emojis. So I think, well, go ahead. I was just going to say we could end on a really strong public lands question.
Well, now we can do that if you want. I just want, I'm going to have to boogie out of here, but that doesn't mean my staff has to. Robin, Jesse, who else is sticking around? Dana, you sticking around? Nylon, big Nylon over here, by the way. You just cost me a lot of money on him, by the way. So Nylon, anybody else? So raise your hands again. Stand up, Nylon, so they can see you. All right? If you have any questions, and after we leave here, get a hold of those four, and we'll handle those directly. Okay, one last public lands question.
Okay, so who has a really good, strong public lands-focused question? Right here. Everybody's pointing to you, so it better be good.
We're in a Red Sox hat.
Yeah, I should take that off. I do want to say I've lived here almost my whole life since I was 9 years old. Been a big user of public lands and every imaginable way. But let me just digress for 2 seconds. My health medical bills just for the drugs are, between me and my insurance company, are $60,000 a year. Oh, so you got to get it right.
Yep.
Whatever we come up with.
You're right.
But back to the public lands.
Nice pivot.
What a segue. But as I've gotten older and because of what I have, I am not near as mobile as I used to be. So rather than being able to enjoy the lands like I used to, I now have to have motorized access.
Right.
And it seems like every time I turn around, the motorized access is being limited and limited and
yep.
limited.
Yep.
And I know that's not a question, but I also look on the wilderness side, and I used to do a lot of wilderness. But when you look at the wilderness as a percentage of the U.S. Forest Service land, wilderness study, and roadless areas, it's right now 51%. So I think we've reached the balance point where we're protecting the wilderness. I want to know how you're going to let old people like me back into the forest so I can enjoy it again.
Well, I think it goes back to the question the gentleman over here asked, and it's just we've got to make sure that the Forest Service has the funding it needs, quite frankly, as a starting point, because you know they're going to prioritize the money that we give them, how it's going to be spent. And if they have to spend it on fighting forest fires, they're not going to spend it on trail maintenance. Or if they're going to spend it on trail maintenance, they may not be expended on access, different access points into the forest that they would have to close down. So we've got to figure it. We've got to get that fixed. So thank you all. Thank you all for being here. Special hand for Hillary.
how appreciative are we that we get to do this, that it is a real town hall meeting with Senator Tester, and how grateful are we for this opportunity to be part of the process with the senator.
Thank you all. Drive careful. Take care. Be well.
And for anybody who would like to stick around and ask some questions of Senator Tester's staffers, they will be here for a bit.
Actually, it was a great event.
Hi.